and a good Friday morning to you. Welcome into the Nick Craig Show, streaming live this morning on YouTube, Rumble, X, and Facebook. Available 24/7 in your favorite podcast app. Just search for the Nick Craig Show. Tap that subscribe or follow button and you'll get a new program each and every weekday morning. You can also listen online by visiting the website nickcraig.com. Our show this morning is brought to you in part by The Law Group. Visit them online at lawgroupnc.com or give them a call, 910-251-6088. We'll have more from The Law Group coming up here a little bit later on in the program this morning. As we begin the show today on a Friday, there is some updates this morning on a potential high-stakes meeting between Russia and the United States. That could be coming as soon as next week. We'll get into those details coming up a little bit later on in the program this morning. But I wanted to start off with an executive order signed by President Donald Trump yesterday. This, I think, is an incredibly massive executive order that the president signed, and it deals with something that has become ever more problematic over the last couple of years. And it is a term that not everybody might be familiar with, but it is the term that is called debanking. And it's exactly what it sounds like it would be when you are debanked. And this has been a growing concern for those on the political right, those on the conservative side of the political aisle over the last couple of years. Now, we know about cancel culture, right? We know that this attempt to get you canceled, to get you kicked off of social media, to get you stripped away of your platform, stripped away of your audience, that is nothing new. We watched that run its course, and it was, I'll admit, it was, I would argue, a very problematic situation that was unfolding. When you had companies and individuals contacting companies, trying to have people's livelihoods ruined, them fired for their jobs, all for expressing a political opinion that people disagreed with. And when I say people, we're talking about those on the left side of the political aisle. You know, it's an interesting concept when you look at cancel culture and you look at this, you know, discussion over free speech and the ability to speak freely. And there's a lot of, I would argue, misconceptions when it comes to free speech and what you are and what you aren't allowed to say. But the idea, the concept that you make commentary on social media, you upload a video to YouTube, you host a podcast, whatever it is, and you find yourself in the crosshairs of the political left. You find yourself in the crosshairs of the mob that will truly do anything and everything possible to ruin your life. And I have kind of ignored the term cancel culture, and I call it life ruination, because that's what it is. Now, being canceled is one thing. Having your, you know, Facebook account disabled or banned, that's one thing. But these people are not interested in that. Now, that's maybe the precipice, right? That might be the first shot that's fired. But they're not satisfied with you just being kicked off of Facebook or being banned from Twitter. They want your life ruined. They believe that those that express a political opinion that they disagree with needs to be run off the face of the earth. They believe that those on the political right that express viewpoints that they find triggering or damaging or, you know, whatever ridiculous terms they'll use to describe it, they want you ruined. They want you permanently, essentially, an outcast of society. And that's a very problematic thing to want. It is a sad sign of political affairs. It is a sad sign of the world that we live in when individuals who have political disagreements with each other want the other one, in some cases, literally killed. I mean, they want these people gone. And this is not an exaggeration. You can go on social media and look at the kind of hatred, hateful, vitriolic things that people say in the realm of political discord. Now, let me be clear with this. Politics are dirty. Politics are messy. Things get heated. People say things. That's not what I'm talking about. I'm not talking about people being mean to local, to elected officials. I'm not talking about people being mean to individuals that they have a political disagreement with. I am talking about a left-wing mob of individuals that conduct what can only be described as a targeted attack on somebody. And the goal, the intention is to ruin that person, to ruin their lives, to strip away their source of income and make their lives a living hell. That's what the objective is. That's what the goal is of cancel culture. Cancel culture doesn't have a great ring to it. I'll give you that, but it's not the full story. It's full on life ruination. Your job, your family, your friends, they want it ruined. All because they have a different political stance, a different political view on what's going on. I mean, just look at the controversy, the drama in the last couple of weeks with, who was it, American Eagle with Sydney Sweeney? I mean, did you see that process unfold publicly? You've got people now claiming that the entity that is a clothing store is pushing white supremacists forward, wanting to ruin the company, all because an individual who I have never seen be overtly political in Sydney Sweeney, I will admit I don't follow her very closely, but I'm not aware of any major campaign events that she speaks at or things that she does that are hyper political besides modeling for a clothing company. Yet she has become the more, one of the more recent targets of not cancel culture, but life ruination. And in the attempt to ruin somebody's life, which is what the political left wants, not only do they go after your social media, which, yes, sucks, but can be dealt with, but they go after your finances. And that's where this phrase and this term and this idea of debanking comes from. It's not a myth. It's not a tinfoil hat. It's not a right-wing conspiracy theory that you have to cook up in a dark room. There are real-life examples of real people, real everyday, normal, regular people that express political opinions online getting debanked. Their bank, a financial institution, blackballs them and bans them from conducting business. And you see this a lot with online content creators who may sell products, may sell services. You've got these major banks and these major payment processors, these major credit card companies. If you get on these individuals' blacklists, you're screwed. You can't sell a product online if you aren't allowed to take credit cards or process credit or debit cards. It's completely infeasible. There's no way that you're going to be able to sell a product or have any success in selling a product if you can't accept the most basic form of payment virtually, of course, right? It's hard to take a cash payment on something that you're buying online. It's not very practical. People aren't going to mail you a check because you're not allowed to take money online. And so in this attempt to ruin, in this attempt to cancel somebody, you've now got financial institutions that are playing a part in this. You now have financial institutions that are determining based on somebody's political ideology, based on their political view and standpoint, that they should no longer be able to conduct business. That is an incredibly concerning and very, very terrifying process. So yesterday, President Donald Trump signed an executive order aiming to prevent banks and other entities, financial institutions, from refusing to offer financial services to people based on their political beliefs or lawful business activity, a practice known as debanking. Trump wrote in the order, quote, "It is the policy of the United States that no American should be denied access to financial services because of their constitutionality or their constitutional or statutory protected beliefs, affiliations, or political views, and to ensure that that politicized or unlawful debanking is not used as a tool to inhibit such beliefs, affiliations, or political views." The president continued by saying banking decisions must be instead based on individualized objectives and risk-based analysis. And, well, that makes perfect sense to me. Right? If somebody is running a shady, illegitimate business, well, then there might be a valid reason to quote-unquote debank them. there might be a valid reason to, quote unquote, cut off their ability to run a business. If they're doing something illegal, that's a completely different ballgame. But we're not talking about people doing things illegal. We're talking about people having a differing viewpoint, a differing political opinion from the moral high ground that is the political left. And so when the president says those banking decisions need to be based on, you know, risk-based analysis, is this individual somebody that is capable of making money and paying their bills? That, of course, should be the metric. Why would you look at anything else besides the fact that this person has money, is generating money, and can pay their bills? If that's all good and above board, why the hell do you care what their political beliefs are? Why would you care what their political ideology is? Earlier this week, Trump accused J.P. Morgan Chase and Bank of America of rejecting more than $1 billion worth of his personal deposits for political reasons. He told CNBC earlier this week, quote, "The banks discriminated against me very badly." The president was on the Squawk Box program on CNBC this week. And well, this is exactly what the president had to say as it relates to this debanking thing that's ongoing.
Well, they did discriminate. I had J.P. Morgan Chase. I had hundreds of millions of dollars in cash. I could see if they want to, you know, if they want to do something bad because you don't have any money and you defaulted and you, they took people out. But I'll give you me as an example. I had hundreds of millions. I had many, many accounts loaded up with cash. I was loaded up with cash. And they told me, "I'm sorry, sir. We can't have you. You have 20 days to get out." I said, "You got to be kidding. I've been with you for 35, 40 years. They said, and I mean, it, I had all this. I didn't know what to do with it. And I went to, and you could ask him, maybe he's not going to admit it. So I said, you know, I was informed by my people that we have to get out of Chase Manhattan. That's Jamie and J.P. Morgan Chase. So I said, I can't believe it. Well, I was never in this situation before. I've never had anything like it. And it's not like, gee, you defaulted on a loan. You know, geez, if I could understand that, that's different. But there's no default. I mean, there's nothing but cash. It's a really, I have a really great company."
Yeah, and so there's the, you know, the firsthand experience and firsthand account there from the president. Now, I'm not necessarily worried about him, right? He is, if he's got all of the money that he's claiming he has, it shouldn't be a problem for him to find a financial institution. This is a much larger problem for, I guess, what I'll call small to medium-sized content creators, people that probably fall into like the category that I would fall into, where you don't have bundles in excess of cash just sitting around waiting for something to happen. And so if you are relying on the ability to collect payments, if you are relying on the ability to process credit cards and process payments for, you know, things like Patreon, which is, you know, what the platform that we use for our bonus content, our daily show notes and things like that. If you have something like that set up for yourself, or you're taking donations through your own website, and then the next thing you know, you're told, well, you're not allowed to do that anymore. You're talking about, again, life ruination, trying to financially destroy somebody, not because they're a shady business person, not because they're running a scam, not because they're ripping people off and stealing their money. No, but because you have a disagreement with their political ideology. Former Republican Kansas Governor Sam Brownman recently alleged that he was debanked as well by J.P. Morgan Chase over his conservative religious views, a claim that the bank has denied. Banks have also been accused of canceling accounts of customers engaged in cryptocurrency ventures and supporting conservative causes such as the Second Amendment. Trump noted that victims of debanking have suffered frozen payroll, debt and crushing interest, and other significant harms to their livelihoods, reputation, and financial well-being. The president said, quote, "Such practices are incompatible with a free society and the principle that the provision of banking services should be based on material, measurable, and justifiable risks," describing discriminatory debanking as, quote, unlawful. Trump's orders order directs banking regulators to remove reputational risk and other equivalent concepts from federal guidelines and instructs the Small Business Administration, the SBA, to require all financial institutions to make reasonable efforts to reinstate anyone who was unlawfully debanked. The president further ordered Treasury Secretary Scott Bessent to develop a comprehensive strategy to combat debanking through legislation or new regulations. Banks found to have been engaged in discriminatory debanking may be subject to fines or other penalties from regulators, according to the order. Trump also directed banking regulators to review complaints and data related to debanking and refer potential unlawful cases to the Department of Justice. Major bank groups applauded Trump's executive action. The bank, according to the American Banker Association and a couple of other groups, they said, quote, "Today's executive order helps ensure that all consumers and businesses are treated fairly, a goal the nation's banks share with the administration. It's in the bank's best interests to take deposits, lend to, and support as many customers as possible. Unfortunately, regulatory overreach, supervisory discretion, and a maze of obscure rules have stood in the way, as this EO makes clear. We thank the administration for its effort to protect access to banking and rein in runaway regulations and look forward to working with the White House, Congress, and the agencies to create a national standard that advances these goals." So you've got a couple of individuals in the banking industry as a whole coming out in support of these regulations, or of this executive order, I should say, against these banks going after individuals. And it's not just individuals. It's also certain industries, specifically in agriculture. I've seen this growing trend that farms, of course, that is an issue for the political left as well because of climate change. They are, many banks have determined that they are no longer going to lend money to small and medium-sized family farms because it does not meet their carbon goal for emissions. They've got these weird standards that have been set up as it relates to climate change, and they are refusing to loan money to the what I can describe and many would describe as the backbone of America, our agriculture industry, our ability to farm and grow product. Right here in North Carolina, I'm not sure if you're aware of this, but the agriculture industry is the largest sector in the state. It's not biotech. It's not technology. It's not anything else, not pharmaceuticals. It's agriculture. It is the largest product in the state of North Carolina. It is the largest driver of the state's economy, business-wise and monetarily-wise and dollar-wise. So what when you're a small to medium-sized family farm and you say, hey, we need a loan, we need a $150,000, $120,000 loan, and you go to a financial institution to get it and they say, well, is your farm, do you have solar panels? What are you doing to combat greenhouse gas emissions? And of course, as a small or medium-sized farmer, you go, no, we don't have any of those things. It's not financially feasible for us to engage in any of those activities. And the bank goes, okay, well, sorry, we're not going to be able to lend you that money. How about if you're in the firearms business? We know that that's a pretty big risk. We've seen discussions over the last couple of years from a variety of payment processors and the big credit card companies, MasterCard, Visa, Discovery, in an attempt to block the ability for individuals that sell guns, sell ammunition, you know, gun stores, gun shops, the ability for them to process payments. These individual payment processors have, well, these aren't even processors. These are the major financial institutions, MasterCard, Visa, and Discover. They have blocked the ability, in some cases, for these people to collect payments. So explain to me how you, as somebody who is operating a gun or ammunition store, how the hell are you supposed to stay in business if you can no longer accept credit cards or debit cards? All of your payments are going to happen via cash. people are going to walk in with $1,100, $1,200 cash to purchase a firearm? Oh, no, they'll write you a check, right? Yeah, I'm sure that'll work. I mean, it's absurd. But this is the attempt, this is the ability of those on the political left to wield an incredible, and I say incredible, I mean an incredible amount of power. If you are blocked by MasterCard, Visa, and Discover, and you are a business, you are done. It is over. You can no longer operate or conduct your business. And so when I talk about how it's not really cancel culture, it's life ruination, that's what I'm talking about. No business in 2025 can operate without the ability to accept credit cards or debit cards. Now, you're right. You can find one-off examples at a flea market or something like that. You might find a vendor that only takes cash. Sure. But you're not spending hundreds of dollars with that vendor. You're buying, you know, an $8 tchotchke thing. You can make that work with cash. But I'm talking about business. Brick and mortar businesses. How are you going to keep your lights on? How are you going to pay your rent? How are you going to have payroll for your employees when you're no longer allowed to accept the ability or no longer able to accept credit or debit cards? You're no longer have the ability to process payments in a digital form. Cash only? For the vast majority of businesses, that's completely impractical. And as many places have gone to, they don't even accept cash anymore. So now you've got a situation where people don't carry it around. So not only are you not able to accept credit cards or debit cards because you are a conservative, but now not the vast majority, but I would say a lot of people are not carrying around any sort of cash at all because half the places you go don't even take it. And so you can see the problematic situation that begins to unfold. And I can say pretty squarely this morning, and I think I can say with a pretty high level of confidence, that this is almost exclusively pointed at one side of the political aisle. This is not a situation where you've got, this is happening on both sides. Both sides are guilty of this. I haven't seen any evidence to back that up at all. The individuals who are being debanked, the companies, the charities, the nonprofits, the advocacy groups that are being debanked are exclusively on the right. They are exclusively pushing a conservative message or conservative narrative. And for having the audacity to do that, JP Morgan Chase, Bank of America, and other many large financial institutions have slowly been kicking these people out. They have been slowly not allowing these individuals to create new accounts, have not given them the ability to process payments. It is a mess of a situation that is unfolding. And all because individuals want to speak their mind. All because individuals have a different view on something that's happening politically. And I will contend to you this morning that that is not a good situation. I will contend to you that it is not good for society when you've got people who cannot open their mouths and express their political opinion because they fear, they risk losing the ability to earn a livelihood, risk the ability to process payments, or risk the ability to hold their money or hold their loans with a financial institution. I can't think of any situation in which that is good. Again, unless you are a legitimate and literal criminal, unless you are running some sort of, you know, terrorist cell operation, and doing things that are illicit and using big banks to do it. Unless that's the situation, which is not what we're talking about, I can't find and wrap my head around a single example where this is good for society. Now, Democrats think it's good because they understand that if you can hit people in their wallet, if you can go after their bread and butter, go after their ability to earn a living, go after their ability to sell products or sell goods or sell services, you're done. When the cash dries up, unless you're independently wealthy or have a whole bunch of money in the bank, you got to move on, right? You got to have some cash rolling in. You got to provide for your family. You don't have the platform like President Donald Trump does. You don't have the platform like many of the larger individuals on the right do when they go through this process. They have the platform to speak out, right? They can get on cable news. They can plead their case publicly. But what about the guy that's making, you know, that's doing this as kind of a hobby and is making $50,000 or $60,000 a year, doing this as a full time job, started as a hobby? You're not getting rich off $50,000 a year, but it's enough to pay your bills. It's enough to live your life. What happens when that guy gets gone after? What happens when that guy no longer has the ability to sell things online? What happens when that guy no longer can hold his money in a financial institution? He's screwed. He has no recourse. Yeah, great. He can go on X, post about it there, maybe tag Elon Musk or whatever, but you just don't have the platform. You don't have the ability to reach the mass audience to actually make a change. And if they can do this to people like President Donald Trump, if they can do this to his wife in Melania, if they can do this to the former Republican Kansas governor and Sam Brownback, if they can do it to those people, we're talking about high visibility people. We're talking, you know, the current president of the United States, the former governor of a state. If they can go after those people, what stops them from completely ruining me and completely ruining you? The answer is not a whole hell of a lot. A couple of keystrokes and it's done. And your recourse is non-existent. So I think, you know, as we look at executive orders, we look at what Trump is doing, what his team is doing, and the long-term implications, the long-term impacts. While debanking is not the sexiest topic in the world, while it's not something that I would argue the vast majority of people even know, they don't even know it exists. They may have never even heard the term before. But you talk about, you know, kind of changing culture and making some of these decisions. You look at kind of the foundation of it. This, to me, this executive order is one of those foundational changes. It's not going to get the crazy big news headlines. It is not necessarily something that the vast majority of people deal with, but it has a huge impact. And it begins the process of slowly chipping away at all of the damage and all of the destruction that Democrats have done over the last couple of years. And so I think this is a great executive order. I hope that not only does it continue to move forward, this needs to be codified in law. Executive orders are great, but they're only as good as the executive. And once the executive is gone and another political party's in power, those can be stripped away. If you want to talk about making generational change, protecting free speech, protecting individuals' ability to have an opinion, to express that opinion, this is the kind of fundamental change that needs to be conducted. These are the kinds of things that need to not only be done in an EO, but they need to be codified by Congress. They need to be written in stone. And if, you know, a future Congress wants to change the law, they have the ability to do that, sure. But it's not as easy as revoking an executive order. It's not as easy as just crossing it out with a pen, which is essentially what the president or what a president can do with previous executive orders. We saw a lot of that in the first Trump administration with Barack Obama. He was able to immediately just cross out and strike out a whole bunch of executive orders because Obama was unable to move things through Congress in the last couple of years of his presidency. This is a major, major issue. This is something that changes the culture. And I commend the president for moving forward with it. And I hope between the Treasury Secretary, him, and other folks in the administration that they twist the bolts on Congress on this and get some sort of legislation passed to make sure that this doesn't continue to happen to people, because it is a very, very sad sign of the times, a very scary situation when you can't open your mouth publicly without the risk of having your life literally ruined and no longer be able to conduct business. It's a very, very scary situation. I'll have the link to this in the show notes over at patreon.com/Nick Craig. Another great EO from President Trump. We'll keep an eye on those details. As we continue this morning, I want to let you know that when legal challenges arise, make sure you put your trust in the law group right here in Wilmington. Since 2003, their experienced attorneys have provided high-quality, affordable legal services across the eastern half of our state. Whether you're facing a divorce, navigating real estate transactions, or maybe you're in a position where you need a strong defense, the law group has your back. Their dedicated team ensures your questions are answered and issues are resolved as quickly as possible. Great news, folks. They're located in downtown Wilmington and just a phone call away at 910-251-6088, or you can visit them online at lawgroupnc.com. Give them a call, 910-251-6088, or their website, lawgroupnc.com. The Law Group, experience and dedication you can rely on. We appreciate the Law Group and their continued support of the Nick Craig Show. Encourage you to not only support them, but all of our advertisers that truly give me the ability, truly allow me to do this show each and every weekday morning. And of course, our great friends over at patreon.com/Nick Craig. So war continues to rage between Russia and Ukraine. There could be a meeting apparently as soon as Monday between President Trump and Vladimir Putin. We'll get into a couple of those details as we round out a Friday edition of the Nick Craig Show, streaming live on YouTube, Rumble, X, Facebook, and 24/7, wherever you get your podcasts. And a good Friday morning. Welcome back to the Nick Craig Show. Thanks for spending some time with us. It's been a very busy news week. Recapping and covering some details yesterday, President Donald Trump and Russian President Vladimir Putin are set to meet as early as Monday, according to reports. Fox News is reporting this morning. Two sources familiar with the negotiations told Fox News that the summit was in works and could come as early as Monday, with Rome being discussed as a possible destination. If the meeting moves forward later in the week, Rome still may be possible, though other countries are in the mix as well in Europe and elsewhere. The summit could still ultimately fall apart, as Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky has told the United States he won't concede any territory in a peace deal with Russia and that only the Ukrainian parliament can do that. A meeting between Putin and Trump would be the first since Trump returned to office this year, and it would be a significant milestone in a three-year-old war, though there's no promise such a meeting would lead to the end of fighting, since Russia and Ukraine, again, both sides continue to remain rather fractured. And while Trump cannot force either side to come to an agreement, while he cannot force one side or the other to come to their senses and realize that neither side is going to win the war, I put that in air quotes, the morning take on my morning line email, which you can get over at the website, nickcraig.com, reads this: Donald Trump will meet with Putin next week, a clear contrast between the last administration's weakness and the current administration's commitment to leading with strength. And that really, you have to kind of look back. And I think it's important to do so when you're analyzing what is going on currently, to look at in this case, relatively recent history, over just the last couple of years, the big difference between what you saw with President Joe Biden and what you're seeing now with Trump and his administration. Not only did Joe Biden not attempt to broker any sort of deal, he not once during his time in the Oval Office, after this war broke out, he not one time picked up the phone and had a conversation with the president of Russia. He never talked to Vladimir Putin. How can you be funding Ukraine at the tune of hundreds of billions of dollars and not once pick up the phone and talk to the other guy on the side of the war? How can you never have a discussion with him? I mean, it seems completely implausible that that would be the case. But that's exactly what happened. That's not, again, that's no conspiracy theory. Joe Biden never had an open dialogue, never had a phone call, never had a conversation with the Russian president. How is that leading from a position of power? Obviously, the United States wanted to be involved, right? Because they sent all of our taxpayer dollars over there to fight the war. So obviously, if the United States was completely disconnected from it, I'd say, fine, you don't talk to either side. You have no vested interest, whatever. It's not our problem. But it is the United States' problem. Because we, as taxpayers, invested hundreds of billions of dollars to continue this operation. So we obviously are invested. We obviously have some sort of vested interest in the outcome of this conflict. And you can't even pick up the phone and call the other guy? You can't even open some sort of dialogue or some sort of channel of communication with the leader of another major country, which is Russia? Folks, that's not a smart political decision. That's not it putting yourself in a position where, oh, we're not going to lend any credibility. We're not going to give any air to the Russian president. That is complete and total stupidity. That is complete and total incompetence from the previous administration. You can't end a war if you're unwilling to speak to both sides. And what we've seen over the last 7 months is this attempt to bring some sort of closure to this. Zelensky's been here in the United States making an ass of himself. We watched that unfold. Trump, to this point, I think has had, at least what we know about publicly, 2 to 3 phone calls with the Russian president. That doesn't mean that other conversations have not taken place that were not widely publicized, but at least 2 to 3 that we've been told about and have been informed about. And now, coming up again as early as next week, within the next, could be as soon as the next 3 days, Trump is going to fly somewhere east, either Rome, somewhere in Europe, and meet with the Russian president face to face. Does that guarantee that the war ends? No. Does that guarantee that there are concessions made? It does not, because you're not dealing necessarily with an individual that is interested in ending the war. And that's a point that I've had and a stance that I've had for quite some time, and I continue to stand by it. I'm not sure that the Russian president wants to end the war. I think he is more than satisfied with letting this play out. Now, Ukraine on the other side, they seem to be more willing than maybe they were in the past. You know, Zelensky has talked about, we want this to end, we want that to end, so on and so forth. But then every time you see him in front of a camera or microphone, he seemingly is completely negating some of his other comments and trying to paint a very different picture to Western media. I think, and I assume, and I hope that he has come to the realization that that's not going to be practical long term, that he is going to have to sit down at the negotiating table, that there are going to have to be concessions from both sides to bring this to an end. And truly, after this meeting, which again could be as soon as Monday, after this meeting, if truly no concessions can be made, if nothing can be done, I think it's time for the United States to seriously consider pulling all support and all aid from Ukraine, continue to sanction Russia, and just let it be. If Donald Trump can't negotiate a deal between these two parties, I am pretty convinced, and I feel strongly, that nobody can, that it's not going to happen. At a certain point, if you're the United States, who again is not directly involved in this conflict as it threatens the U.S., we're directly involved in sending money and sending munitions, but it's not something that's affecting the United States, then as I've stated for months now, then let Europe deal with it. Let the EU deal with it. Let all of these allies, let NATO, let these other groups deal with it. It's no longer the United States' sole responsibility and sole problem. So not exactly sure when this is going to happen. Monday seems to be a little bit soon for me, at least just looking at everything that we've got available. Monday would be an incredibly quick turnaround. Trump would have to jump on a plane sometime probably late tomorrow to get set up for this, or maybe early in the day on Sunday. So it's going to be a very quick turnaround. We'll keep an eye on that, and if it happens Monday, we'll keep our eye on the coverage and bring you those details right here on the Nick Craig Show. As we round out our Friday edition, we've been looking at the tropics throughout the week as we are now in what is traditionally and historically been the more active times in the 2025 Atlantic hurricane season. Some good news to pass along this morning. Tropical Storm Dexter is gone. That is no longer being tracked. There was a wave off of Africa that I've talked about throughout the week. That area, now we're looking at this orange hashed area from the National Hurricane Center out of Miami, Florida. They indicate that that storm is going to go well out to sea. It looks like it's going to completely even bypass Bermuda. It is going to essentially split the continents in half here. So not going to be any major risk to the United States or Bermuda or the Lesser Antilles or any of those islands down south. So that's not going to be a problem. However, some modeling does show another second African wave that could potentially cause some problems. But we're looking at something more than 2 weeks away at this point. So very, very early in that, nothing for certain. And again, August, September are the two busiest months in the Atlantic hurricane season. As you've heard me say, and as I'll continue to reference, if you're not already prepared for the hurricane season, if you don't have your supply kit ready, if you haven't run the generator and changed the oil and checked the gas and done all those fun things, now is the time to do it. You don't want to have to, 3 days before a hurricane, be scrambling to try and figure out why your generator's not starting, why you're having problems getting that up and running. Somebody speaking from experience, you don't want to deal with that stuff a couple of days before the storm. So make sure if you're in a position and that's what you have set up and prepared, that you are ready to go, as more than likely we will have some sort of tropical system. How strong will it be? We don't know. We've already had a tropical storm so far this season. In all likelihood, based on our geographic location and history, we are likely to deal with something else. Will it be a massive hurricane? We have no idea to know, but there will be something else as we likely continue through the Atlantic season. NHC.NOAA.gov, that's the official website of the National Hurricane Center. Well, that's going to do it for a Friday edition of the Nick Craig Show. Busy show this week. Thanks for being here. Thanks to the Law Group in Wilmington for their continued support. Give them a call at 910-251-6088 or visit their website, lawgroupnc.com. Thanks for joining us, 7 a.m., YouTube, Rumble, X, and Facebook, and 24/7 wherever you get your podcasts. We're back here Monday morning on the Nick Craig Show. Have a great weekend.